Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 8 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us again. Thanks for staying with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Rich Galen is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Rich is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, and he's the publisher and the editor of Mullings.com, the I think by now thrice-weekly cyber column. It was twice-weekly during the summer. I think he may be back to 3 times a week real soon, and he's in New York, and he's here to help us commemorate the 5th anniversary of 911. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, my friend. Nice to be with you.
It's good to be back with you, and thank you for spending some time with us. You know, Rich, I was telling the audience earlier that I had just gotten off the air when and walked out to my car. I was in my car within 2 minutes after turning my equipment off in my studio, and I'd gotten in my car to run an errand, and the radio was on, and the volume was up, and the first thing that came out of the radio was, a plane has just crashed into a building in New York City. Mm. And I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go back in. So I don't know why I was so compelled. I mean, that's pretty noteworthy comment for an announcer to make. So, but I said, I want to go back in. So I went straight back in to my office, turned the television on, and just about 30 seconds after my backside hit the seat, I was able to watch the second plane bank into the other tower.
That is not so different from my story. I was, at those days, I used to work from home. I had this stand-up desk in my den, and I was pretty good at it. I mean, I went down to the office, to my office, the den, you know, at about 6:30 or 6:45 every morning, and would work all day. But that morning, for some reason, I was watching an old movie because I didn't think there was anything much going on, and my wife called and said, turn on the TV, and it was right after the first plane had hit, and the same exact thing. I hadn't had the TV on for, you know, 45 seconds when the second plane went in, and from there on. And, you know, one of the things, and I think this is especially for small businesses, you know, I remember I was going through all the stuff I wrote after 9/11 5 years ago, and it wears you down a little bit because it was so emotionally draining that kind of dredging all those things up again is, I'm not sure, is terribly helpful. But one of the things I did write, and I think I was correct about, and it didn't happen, was that I thought that the SBA, the Small Business Association, should have treated 9/11 for small businesses the way FEMA treats a flood, you know, where they move trailers in and they move bodies in and they move, you know, they move, they set up storefronts and say you can help. And I wrote in one of the columns that the SBA ought to do that in every town in the country, you know, 15,000 or more, and have an SBA office, you know, in some vacant place on some version of Front Street that every, you know, town has, so that small businesses who are just being hammered, as you remember, because you know, they don't have the leverage of a large corporation, and they don't have the government coming in to bail them out. But I still think that would have been a good idea, and I think that's a lesson that we never did learn that we ought to learn again.
Well, probably so. I will tell you that, and as you alluded to, and as you probably know, the ramifications, the tentacles of destruction of 9/11, of the events of 9/11, rippled through the economy, through small businesses, for months and months and months after that happened. And because there were so many transactions that were just abbreviated and basically stopped,
right?
Where you know, work was done, products were bought, contracts were signed, but the people on the other end said, "Look, it's 9/11 happened. We're not going to follow through on this." And
yeah, exactly.
And that was all over the country.
I was writing about. Do you need to go?
No.
I thought I heard the music come up. We were at our son had been trapped in Tokyo because he'd been traveling with the Treasury Secretary. They flew the Treasury Secretary home, and my son ended up hitching a ride on a C-5. Finally, after about 5 days, he got back to the U.S., and about 3 days later, he got home. So we went out to dinner, and you and I have eaten here at a place called Ocean Air in downtown Washington, a very fancy seafood restaurant, which on a typical whatever that was Friday night would be jammed to the gills. There were three tables in use, and that got me to thinking that, you know, the everybody from the people who catch the fish to the people who move it to who package it, the kitchen staff. I mean, you go even the car parkers. I mean, the number of people who and small businesses that were directly and unalterably affected by this, and they got lost in the dust.
It's a cruel world. Rich, stand by. We are going to take a break now, folks. It's almost 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. When we come back, I want Rich to talk to us a little bit about terrorism as an efficient weapon. It may be the most efficient thing we've ever seen, and get his thoughts on that and where we're going from here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Rich Galen is our guest, and his website is mullings.com, M-U-L-L-I-N-G-S.com. That's where you can go to subscribe to his. When's it going to be thrice weekly, Rich?
It's right after, you know, Labor Day is a Monday, so that's
already. Well,
so it's back to 3 days a week.
Okay, well, I thought that I wasn't sure. I'm a happy subscriber, and I couldn't remember if I'd gotten three this week or not. Rich, in a piece that I wrote in not long after 9/11 and then updated recently and published, I called this piece "The Top 10 Things I Believe to Be True About the Global War on Terror." Number six is terrorism is very efficient. Even failed acts are successful because they almost always have the effect of limits being imposed on free society. And, you know, for example, 5 years after one person's failed attempt to detonate a single shoe bomb on one airplane has resulted in hundreds of millions of airline travelers around the world being reminded of shoe bomb dangers as they have their shoes checked prior to boarding a commercial airplane. Terrorism is a very efficient weapon, isn't it?
It is very efficient, and whether it's foreign terrorism or domestic terrorism, an even broader reaction to an extremely small event was whoever put arsenic, I think it was, or cyanide in Tylenol capsules.
Oh, yeah, in Chicago.
In Chicago, it was a very small experience. I think two or three people died from it. And every single package from that point on has had two and three different layers of safety put on it just because of that one event.
One person.
Hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent because of that.
As beautiful as our free society is, in an imperfect world, it's a fragile concept, isn't it?
Well, it is, and the column I wrote this morning was a reprise of the one I wrote on the first anniversary on September 11th, 2002. It's called The New Jerusalem, which I thought was more positive than just recounting the things I wrote right after the attacks. And one of the things this is a truism. It's unfortunate, but when you're at war, you put up with more things. You put up with more constraints on as Americans. We put up with more things than we ever would if we didn't feel that we were under, you know, the threat of imminent attack. I mean, everybody knows that you have to open all your stuff up if you're going to go through an airport, but you can't go into a office building in Washington without having to open your backpack or your purse or whatever it is you're carrying in it. So, I mean, and, you know, you look at these folks, you say they have no police background, they have no military background, they have no idea what the hell they're looking at.
Right.
But you know what? You just do it because it's another infringement on our freedoms that someone's going to look at our stuff. And if you want to go in the building, you got to open your bag.
You know, I wrote a piece a couple of months after 9/11, Rich, called The Maintenance of Freedom. And in that piece, I compared how we had gotten in America with regard to terrorism and those evil people out there who would like to do us harm. I compared that to a landlord, to a property owner who had been sort of eating on his prior maintenance and had not been reinvesting back in his business, mm-hmm. in his property, and eventually the roof started leaking.
Right.
And I kind of felt like over the last couple of decades, in the 80s and the 90s at least maybe, that the United States had not been doing a good job of maintaining our freedom. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, we're so adaptive as a society. We will put up with almost anything. I mean, at some point, we'll say that's too far. But again, the too far part is a long distance when you think you're more than where you were before. I'm looking down. I'm on the 16th floor of this hotel, looking down on people walking up and down the streets.
You're in New York City.
In New York City, and it's the president just came by. He was at the Waldorf from just across the street and down the block. And you look at all these folks, and they're just walking around doing their stuff. There's people with backpacks, people with bags, people getting on buses, people getting in cabs. And the fact is that for the overwhelming proportion of us, for the overwhelming proportion of our time, there is no difference in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
But at the times when there are, if you stop and think about it, you go, well, why do I have to do this again? I mean, think about your banking.
Yep.
I mean, try to open a bank account these days. I mean, you got to have, it's like you got to go back three generations and prove who you are. Mm-hmm. Getting a driver's license has become, tougher than getting a passport.
But as you say, we become adaptable. Are we too adaptable, Rich? When these things happen, shouldn't we be a little angrier about them and cause these terrorists to take more of, and demand more of a toll be taken on those guys? Are we too adaptable?
Well, it goes away in a hurry. I remember sitting in a meeting when we were in Afghanistan. This is well before Iraq. In the Pentagon, and saying, where is the scrap iron, the equivalent of the 21st century scrap iron drive from World War II? What are we doing to let everyday Americans participate in this thing? And the fact is there has been, and this is a failing of the administration, there has been no positive, mm-hmm. Coordinated effort to get people revved up and interested
right.
in it. So the only way that we're affected is when we try to rent a car or
right.
Go
exactly.
to the airport.
Rich, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to ask Rich, where do we go from here? And then the big question, is it possible that we could actually lose the war against terrorists? Tintel, I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're commemorating 9/11, the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Rich Galen is our guest, by the way, folks. Rich is an old friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. I encourage you to check out his website, mullings.com. Rich, as we went to the break, I told the audience that I was going to ask you, where do we go from here? And as you answer my question, I'd like to incorporate the idea or the possibility that we actually could lose the war against radical Islam, the war on terror. What are your thoughts?
Well, it depends, I guess, on how you define win and lose. If you define lose as having to live in this kind of environment for the next 50 or 100 years, then you may be right. It may well be. I mean, given transportation options, given communications options that didn't exist before but do now, it is not unlikely that any small group of people can gather themselves and, as you said, do an enormous amount of damage with relatively small amounts of assets. So if that's the definition, then then you may be right. But you know, over the course of 3,000-4,000 years, way more than just the 2,000 years of Christianity. I mean, going back to Druids and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, organized religions have fought with other organized religions over belief systems, and somehow or another, you know, humanity gets through it and they move on and wait for the next big fight. I mean, whether it's the Spanish Inquisition or Crusades or what we're going through now.
Well, now we have the Shiites and the Sunnis fighting each other.
Yeah, well, that's not so different from the Catholics and the Protestants fighting
right.
each other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In Ireland. I mean,
very recently.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that, you know, they think that that's somehow some Eastern foolishness, but it's really not. I mean, that's the sort of thing I think we have to look toward, that sooner or later the cost gets too high and everybody says, okay, enough already, and they put down their bombs and put down their guns and you try to get along, if even in an uneasy truce, but you keep moving ahead. And again, that's part of why, you know, why humans are the dominant species on the planet. We kind of get over that stuff. We adapt to it. We move on, and you build something else.
Where should we go from here, Rich? President Galen, where should we go from here? Prime Minister Galen, where should we go from here?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that one of the things we have lost, and this isn't an insight that's so great. One of the things I read when I was going through my old columns is I read an email that I'd gotten from a reader who had forwarded an email from his son. This is something that will strike you. And his son was on a Navy ship, a U.S. naval ship, somewhere, and my sense was it was like an Aegis destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
About 9/11, they had been tied up with a German ship in port, and they were, you know, doing what kids do, playing soccer, playing baseball, playing football, whatever they were doing. And 9/11 happened, and everybody put to sea, and as the ships were parting, this reader's son said in his email that the call came for everybody to man the rails on the port side, I guess. And the German ship had come back around. Its entire crew was in dress blues with an American flag at half mast with
wow.
a gigantic sign that said, "We're with you." It's hard to
wow.
get through that.
Yeah.
Now that's what we've lost, and I'm not sure why we've lost it or how we've lost it. I think part of it may have been the fact that we were the ones attacked, so that we needed to kind of take the lead. But if I had my druthers, without giving up any sovereignty and without backing down on anything, and that's just something that Karen Hughes, at my friend at the State Department,
right.
has been working on. I think. Rebuilding those kinds of, and there's nothing you can do about the French. They'll always be the French.
That's right.
But there are a lot of other countries and a lot of other people in those countries who were with us, just as those the sailors on that German frigate were.
Right.
That for some reason are not now, and I think if we can rebuild that, that's how you avoid losing the war on terror.
Well, at the risk of sounding cynical, someone once said, "Countries don't have friends; they have interests."
Mm-hmm.
And
same thing with businesses, but that's not to say that you can't. I mean, we see this all the time. There are business associations where competitors join together, you know, for a common cause.
And well, I wish we could figure that one out, Rich, because I think that's the key to making all this happen. Hey, Rich, thank you for being here. God bless you and your family.
And you, my friend.
Yeah. Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen. Cool. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be back on the other side of the news. Two New York City residents will be with us in the next hour, Heather McDonald and Bob Dylan Schneider. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.